Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Press One for Democracy. This is your host, Dan Aronson. Thank you for spending a little bit of your Monday evening with us, whether it be early evening out like it is out here in the great Northwest, or whether you're up late and maybe sneaking a little snack in from the fridge and sitting down to talk a little bit of what's going right in our world. That's right. I want to have this to be a very positive show. It's very positive to me. It's a very positive and a very empowering subject we're going to be talking about. I framed it a little bit in the negative, in the form of the negative, but it's that was more of the warning, right? So tonight's show is entitled Divided We Fail. And yes, I meant to say fail. So what does that mean, divided we fail? So last week we had a great show. We had Mansoor Ghidfar, the communications director for Represent Us, who is the campaign behind the Anti-American Corruption Act. And it's kind of been a theme that's continued. I know that on Lunch with Loudon, Janine talked about when do we have our voice? When do our representatives in Washington, D.C. start listening to us and not the moneyed interest? So it is, of course, the central theme for the coffee party. And so we are going to talk about that tonight. We're going to talk about finding our common ground, being very specific in how we can get past this divisive, vitriolic conversation that we've been having in this country for 20 or 30-odd years, ever since the haves and the have-nots started lining up on other sides of the fence. And we're going to talk about, the obvious things, the mathematics of it, the things that are indisputable. So some of the things obviously are going to be philosophical in nature. They're up for discussion. There may be no right or wrong answer. But certain things are mathematical certainties, like, for instance, what we're talking about in inequality in this country is a 98% versus 2% split. We're going to talk about those kinds of things and how we can get, assuming you're part of the 98%, I know I am, luckily I'm not the one in five people living in poverty today, or I don't have one in five children living in poverty today, but I'm doing all right, but still, I'm certainly not the 2%. So we want you to call in and tell us how you plan on putting down your battlement, your armor, lowering your shields, if you will, when you walk into or when you come into the orbit of a planet surrounded by maybe some of your quote-unquote political enemies, right? So we'll have the planet. That'll be the analogy for the day. I'm just kind of spinning this up as I'm going along here. That'll be kind of the analogy for the show. So the planet will be the issue at hand, right? Let's call it minimum wage. And what do we do about minimum wage? And then we'll have the blue and the red ship circling the planet, trying to figure out how to conquer it and get what they want. And what effect? And how can we lower our shields and come to a peaceful settlement? So to do that, I want you to call in tonight, and that's at our phone number here, as always, is 646-929-2495. And when you get into the queue to join into the conversation, press 1 on your phone, and then a little indicator light will show up on my little panel here that says you want to become part of the conversation. So I thought I'd start out the call or the show tonight with doing a little setup by just playing a little one-minute clip here, a little short clip from last week's call. So again, we had Mansoor Ghidfar from Represent Us, the sponsors of the Anti-American Corruption Act, I should say. We don't like the American Anti-American Act, do we? But I want to play something that he said when a caller called in and said, and it was our friend One Angry Jew, and he might be on the line, so in case you're listening, I want to give you a credit. But he was talking about the fact that every time he heard people being called out for sponsoring corruption, it was typically somebody who was associated with the conservative side. And that really brought home the point which is how do we stop looking at each other in these massive broad brush strokes, conservative, liberal, Democratic, Republican, and get to the point where we can kind of disregard the labels and just talk about what we have in common versus what we have that we're usually fighting about. So let's listen to what Gitfar had to say on that subject.
Oh, you did. Sorry, I thought you were talking to him.
I've gone and muted him because I wanted to.
I lost track of things there for a minute there.
He got a little
derailed there, but I would recommend because you know as we've just seen, it is tough to get people who have been conditioned by the last the recent just explosion.
Well, I apologize for that, folks. We seem to have had a technical difficulty in our file format. I apologize. So, well, we're off to a good start today, right? So basically what happened is Mansoor went on to say basically two things. He said, if you're a liberal, he said, hug a libertarian. He said, ask him about what he feels or she feels about the war on drugs. And see how soon you come to a common place. You know, he said, talk to a Tea Partier, Mr. Liberal. Talk to a Tea Party about crony capitalism and about the way that we prop up profitable corporations with additional subsidies. And see if that Tea Partier is for or against his or her tax dollars going to already profitable corporations through subsidies. And you'll see how quickly you will find common ground. And that's what we're going to talk about tonight. We're going to talk about all the different places where we actually have common ground and have things where we can reach across the aisle, where we can make a difference. And his whole point was, why talk about the things we know we're never going to agree about, right? Well, you know, if a conservative or liberal, why talk about abortion rights? You know, chances of you coming to an agreement or having either side change, not so much. He said, why start there? Let's start on the stuff we know we agree about. So we're going to talk about those things tonight, and I've got a caller already calling and having his hand raised, so I'm going to bring 518 in. Who do I have the pleasure of speaking with?
Hello, this is Jeff Gall from Albany, New York. How are you?
Hi, Jeff. How are you? How are things in Albany, New York?
Well, not so great, actually. We're very close to the horrible things going on, I guess, in Albany. But I really want to compliment you on what you're trying to do here in terms of finding common ground. Because, I mean, we're the people, and you know, most of us have so much in common. It's crazy that we are fighting over opinions about certain things, and it was never meant to be that way. And you know, really, we're losing a battle against billionaires. You know, if you really know what's going on out there, if you know about who really controls and really owns the Federal Reserve Board and things like that. So for me, I mean, this is really important. But one thing that I'm a little bit concerned, I really consider myself to be one of the first Tea Partiers, so to speak. And I don't know where this, you know, this misconception was created, but the Tea Party is not a group of conservatives. It's not. I mean, conservatives have tried to take it over, but the Tea Party, the founders of that movement, are people that believe in our Constitution. Our Constitution is law, and it's supposed to be inviolate, and it was brilliant by the founders. You know, it created a republic, not a democracy, a republic form of government like no other. And so many people, if they understood the importance of our Constitution and our republic, with efforts like this, you know, that you're presenting tonight, where we have to, you know, find common ground and realize that we, you know, we have one thing in common. We have many things in common, but the most important thing we have in common is the Constitution that says we are all equal. No one has privileges, you know, over anyone else, or that anyone else does not possess.
Yeah, well,
I mean,
first
really
of all,
go ahead.
No, I'm just saying you've made several actually, you know, brilliant points that we are in total agreement with. So let's start by taking, you know, let's address your complaint. I'm not sure that I necessarily said that. If I did say Tea Partiers equal conservatives, I certainly didn't mean to.
Friends
of this show know that I detest the single axis graph, if you will, that is used to plot out people's political philosophies. I hate the left v. right because I'll tell you why.
Me too.
Are going to fall issue by issue on different all over the place,
exactly.
Right? So that's
exactly.
Why we believe
yes.
in the transpartisan matrix, which has liberal on the left and conservative on the right, but on the top it has order, which is a strong central government control, and then on the bottom you have freedom. Right, so there's different ways to get to all different points, and that really the transpartisan matrix adds that. Well, how are we going to get there? If we want to be more conservative on this issue, how do we get there? Do we do it through government hammering down and having strict laws, or do we do it through allowing people to be free and free to act how they will? So, yeah, that's I'm with you. I try not to label anyone as a whole. But let's take it issue by issue.
Well, if I may, please jump in there. Though you just used the phrase "strong central government control," and I mean that totally defies logic. It's against America. It's against what we stand for. Our government, all of our governments, all branches, all of those servants are exactly that. They're our servants. We the people have the ultimate authority. I mean, and that has never been changed. Although we do have a lot of servants that pretend as though it has been changed. So, I mean, to me, I don't even like hearing anyone talk about strong central government control because that's not their purpose. The only purpose of our government servants is to protect us. Period. They have no other role. And so strict laws, I mean, is anti-American. And I mean, the more laws we have that are based upon imposing our will or someone's will on someone else, or that are based on someone thinking that they're voting for it in a democratic election process, I mean, those are potentially certainly anti-American because we have a set of laws, superior inviolate laws, that no one can, I mean, that's what they are, they're inviolate, so no one can violate them. And if we start there, in many of these, you know, controversies or disagreements, they'd be answered by our superior law. And really, there's no room for discussion. And I personally, I mean, I shame on both the Democrat and the Republican parties for being more interested in power than our superior laws, and they're both equally guilty. They both parties, certainly at the national level, should be ashamed of themselves for not caring about what this country is founded upon, the laws of our land. They ignore them.
Well, so instead of going into and debating that particular topic, right? Because I think there's obviously when it comes to the Constitution, that's a 6 year show we could have on debating the Constitution, right? So
why would there be a debate? I mean,
again, I don't want to get into this, but there are those, myself included, who agree with you. And say this was a brilliant document written by some brilliant people, but they were also brilliant enough to know that times change and that the document itself must be flexible enough to be changed when 3/4 of the people agree on a change. And it's been done 26 times.
That's not what they said, though. That's not true. They did not say that, because what you're talking about is a democracy, and they fought against a democracy, and we won. The people won. This is not a democracy. This is a republic, our own exclusive form of republic. So, no.
No, I understand that. But when three-quarters of the states agree to ratify an amendment to the Constitution changes, correct?
Well, I believe that's the way it was set up, yes.
Right. And it was because these brilliant men realized that their crystal ball, it wasn't going to be perfect. And I think that if it would be fun to have, you know, four or five of those guys, you know, appear out of nowhere, right, and go, hey, look at this. Wow, we could have never envisioned this. Glad you've been
right.
doing some changing to our document. That's why we allowed you to do it. So I don't think people are necessarily disrespecting the Constitution. I mean, although – I'll say that, but here's one I think you and I will both agree with. What do you think constitutionally of the NDAA, unlimited, throwing out all the different clauses that it throws out with the unlimited detention possibility for a U.S. citizen, and FISA and the NSA snooping? You for that or you against that?
Well, I mean, anything that disrupts the rights of the American people is violative of the Constitution, period.
It's important, right? This is where you and I, and I think most people, I mean most people of any political philosophy are going to agree. This was an overstepping of an abuse of power.
Disgustingly. I mean,
This is what this show is all about. I've listened to you, I've understood you, I've heard you, and now I'm like, here's our common ground. Bam, we found one in 2 seconds. I'm sure that you don't like the fact that there's unlimited money being poured into politics. Like, I don't like that fact. Because that's propping up all of the huge government that's spending all of our money to subsidize huge corporations that are very profitable. You don't like that, do you?
Of course not. No, I mean, that's
right.
it was never meant to be.
So here we are, you and I, and we've already found several common grounds. I got a bunch more callers in queue. Can I keep you around as a reference point? Because I have a feeling that some of these folks are going to talk to you. Would you mind just hanging out?
No, not at all.
And then I can bring
you
in if I need an expert on Tea Party philosophy.
Absolutely, sure.
Phenomenal. Phenomenal. Thank you very much. Hold on right
Thank
a
you.
Second. We're going to – I've got in this order, I've got 540, Piston Pat, which I think is my friend Winningly Jew, 781 and 206 to be called into the show. So let's start with 540. Who do I have the pleasure of speaking with?
Hello?
Hello. You're open. Your mic is open. Who's this?
Yes. Hi, I'm Dan Schoonover. I'm calling from the Fredericksburg area in Virginia, and I am just interested in what was just being discussed about the issue of a strong central government. It's my understanding, from my understanding of history, that George Washington was opposed to the Articles of Confederation because they were far too weak, and he wanted a stronger central government. I believe that Thomas Jefferson, Thomas Paine, and Alexander Hamilton stood for a stronger central government. And I just find it interesting, the discussion suggesting that somehow that's not what the Founding Fathers had in mind. I think there was some debate about that and some disagreement about that. There were Federalists, there were Anti-Federalists, and it's not something you can just say, well, the Founding Fathers were opposed to a strong central government.
I'm gonna go ahead and activate my caller's previous caller's mic because I don't want to defend him. I believe what he was saying is not an overbearing. I mean, obviously the founders they were fresh off of a bit on a big anti-monarchy binge, right? So strong federal government scared a lot of people. They said, oh my gosh, are we just going to recreate the monarchies, and we don't want that. So I think it was about striking a balance. But again, I've opened my previous caller's mic, and can you comment to what you meant about strong central government?
Well, I mean, I think that you put it very, you know, very well. And unfortunately, strong can be defined or interpreted in different ways. Yes, the government has to be strong. It has to be real. It has to be, you know, something that can, you know, really can address the issues. And yes, you're right. You know, there was debate, but when I refer to the founders, I refer to what the ultimate decision was. The ultimate decision after they talked about, well, should we have a democratic government? Should we have a republic? Should we have a traditional republic? Should we form our own? Should we incorporate the Bill of Rights? You know, after all that debate, they created the most brilliant and certainly an exclusive republic like no other, where we're all equal. And the government serves us, but the people will always retain the ultimate authority. Our role is to tell our servants what to do in terms of how they protect us. But they have nothing. The ultimate decision was that the founders, you know, decided that our exclusive republic is created so that the servants protect us, but they don't go beyond that. So of course they have to be strong, but they're not, you know, they're not our keeper, they're not our mother, you know, they're not.
That's
they
true.
Does that make more sense, Dan?
It does, but I also wanted to point out that while we are a republic, we also do have a democratic process for electing our leaders.
I think of us
more as a democratic republic or a republican democracy than I do strictly as a republic. I mean, we do have the democratic process for electing those leaders, and when we elect our leaders, we expect them to represent us. And when 92% of the American people, for example, say they want background checks on all handgun or all gun purchases, that is what's supposed to happen. They're supposed to, respond
well,
to that.
I respectfully disagree, though. I'd like to give, you know, my response to it. I mean, there is really, it's an oxymoron to say a democratic republic or republic democracy. I mean, those two words together, knowing the facts, knowing, as again, this is just I'm giving you my opinion based on years of research of looking at what the founding documents said, not what anyone else says, because actually, I'll just add,
it's just that I have so many callers lined up in queue, and we've got an active show tonight.
Okay.
So
okay.
I know in my history books in school that they did refer to it as a democratic republic. I know that's how I learned it. I think we all understand the process, and I think the thing that has us all three of us and I'm sorry. My first caller, my Tea Party friend. What's your name?
Jeff.
I'm sorry. I have a little place where I can save that here if I can multitask, which my wife will tell you I can't. But I think the three of us agree that we elect these guys. They go to Washington. They're supposed to do what we want, and they're just not doing it. And
that's
how
fact.
Is it? So Dan, if you don't mind me asking you, do you affiliate with a party?
I tend to vote Democrat, but I voted Republican before. I'm registered as an independent, so I'm open to who is going to represent what I think is in the best interest of my country, regardless of which party they belong to. Sometimes, it's a Democrat, sometimes it might be a Republican, or it might be an independent. I want what's best for my country, not for a party.
All that does is make you a patriot. So that's a beautiful thing. So here we are, a couple of independents and a Tea Partier, and we've already found common ground. I've got six people that want to jump in.
Okay.
So I'm going to go ahead and mute you guys. I appreciate your time.
Okay.
But you're still. I will bring you back in if till we get to the broader discussion. I'm going to open up Piston Pilot, which I believe is my friend One Angry Jew.
I have no idea where to start. Well, I do have an idea. First of all, the Constitution is a document of negative rights. I hear too many people saying, I have a right to free speech. No, you don't. I have a right to own a gun. No, you don't. Constitution didn't give you any rights. Anybody want to argue with that? Just taking a poll.
I've gone ahead and muted them. It's just you and me. But
the problem is, you're right.
It frames rights and it juxtaposes. To me, what it is it juxtaposes the right of the government and what they can do and what they can't do.
The government
has what they can't do to inhibit my rights.
No, the government has no rights. The Constitution up until the 14th Amendment tells the government what it can't do. After the 14th Amendment, we have a new type of citizen created. If you read through the colloquy of the time when they were trying to pass the 14th Amendment, you will find out that they did not intend the 14th Amendment for anybody else but the freed slaves, meaning that it was a subclass of citizenship. However, now we all fit in that subclass, and they use that subclass now to subjugate us. But you don't get a right to free speech. You don't have a right to bear arms. But I listened to the last caller, the one who said he's a Democrat, but he sometimes also says a Republican. But if 90% of the people believe that, you know, we should have background checks, that's what we should have. Well, no. I don't care what 90% of the people believe. One, if you want to propose an amendment or you want to propose a law, then put it through Congress and see if it passes constitutional muster and if it can make it through the Supreme Court. But don't tell me that because 90% of the people, 90% of the people don't like Jews. I can tell you 90% of the people on Blog Talk Radio don't like the One Angry Jew, me. So if 90% of the people decide that they don't want me on Blog Talk Radio, we'll be using the same logic from the gentleman before.
I'm gonna have to stop you there because that is not the same logic. Let me explain why. What Dan was saying was this, and I'm confident that I'm going to say it because I believe it too. If 90% of the people within a specific congressional district think that there should be a law that makes it mandatory to have background checks on gun owners previous to them buying it, then that particular representative of that district better damn well vote for background checks.
Because
the guy there to represent their ideas, he is there.
One, he took an oath to abide by the Constitution. I don't care if 90% of the people believe something that's contrary to the Constitution, because you must change the Constitution before you make an end run around it. That's the problem that we have now with Barack Obama, who makes end runs around the Constitution constantly. He don't care what it says because he's going to go around it. If you want to make a change, then do it the proper way. And the way
their job, if they passed the law, if SCOTUS wants to declare it to be unconstitutional, a background check law, and says, no, it's a violation of the Second Amendment, then that's for SCOTUS to do. But you know what? All these guys have smart people that work for them that will render a decent opinion on the constitutionality of a bill that they're trying to pass. And the fact is they tried to pass the bill and make it mandatory, and it failed. Now, why is that?
What failed?
The background checks. Or it failed to get to – did it fail to get to the floor?
By your logic, if 90% of the people in a congressional district don't like Jews, then we pass a law prohibiting the rights of Jews. But that's not constitutional. We're in a republic, not a democracy. A democracy, as defined properly, is five wolves and a sheep deciding on what's for dinner. That's a democracy. A constitutional republic must uphold the rights of the people who can't protect those rights by themselves. The only purpose for the federal government was to protect the borders because the states couldn't do that by themselves, and to protect the rights of people who cannot protect those rights by themselves. The government was supposed to be instituted to protect the rights and freedoms of the people, not the other way around. Now we have a government that comes at us. It's not for us. It comes at us. It doesn't protect our rights. It inhibits our rights. It goes after our rights. It denigrates our rights. It makes our rights less powerful because the people, number one, don't even understand how the Constitution is set up in the first place, nor do they understand the constitutional role of the players from the president on down, because it's been redefined by the players themselves. And all the people, when you talk to them, they don't have a clue what's going on. How many people will say, well, I get my right to free speech from the First Amendment? No, you don't. And lawyers will tell you the same thing. Lawyers will stand there and say, oh, you're constitutional free rights from the First Amendment. That's right. Well, where does it say that? Read what it says in the Constitution.
Well, I'm in agreement with you. I agree with you that the interpretation of the most of the first several amendments have been changed. Like I don't believe you have the rights to be whatever religion. It just says that the government can't tell you you've got to be a specific religion.
Right, it doesn't
it's freedom from religion, not freedom of religion. That's how
That's
I read
exactly
it.
Exactly right.
But everybody else seems to think it's freedom of religion. I don't
that
think that's
exactly
the case at all.
Right. It's telling you, it's not telling you, it's a document telling government what government shall and shall not do, not what you should do. However, all things changed the 14th Amendment. Read the 14th Amendment.
Okay.
We've had discussion before.
I will do that. But
the 14th Amendment
since this is a coming together show, so let's are you behind the coffee party's intent to get money out of politics?
I would like to get truth in politics. Can we do that first?
Ooh, how do you do that?
Well, I'm going to give you an example of, I don't even know what's going on. Is the government shutting down or not?
As of Sunday, the House Republicans had voted to tie any deal that would keep it open to the extension or to a delay of the implementation of the AHCA by a year.
The Republicans are idiots, and I'll tell you why.
Well,
I'm going to give you brilliance.
But let's not do that. We're
I'm
finding
give
common
you
ground.
In a teacup. You ready?
We need to find common ground.
Let's find
say
common ground.
One party is an idiot,
you,
or the other parties are dreamers,
brilliance.
Or we. I want to
give
that.
You some. You're not letting me give you brilliance. I got brilliance for you. The Republicans did not want to stop Obamacare, and I'll tell you why. If you recall, over the beginning of the weekend, they said that they were going to put forth a resolution or something that was going to make sure that the military got funded, whether or not the government shut down or not. You recall that?
Yes.
Okay. If they can do a single bill that would fund the military, then they could have done a single bill that would have funded HUD, education. You pick it. Instead of handing a big wad of yarn over to Harry Reid, they could have handed him 100 different bills. And you know what one bill wouldn't have been in there? Obamacare. They would have handed him 100 bills, and Harry Reid would not have been able to say, I'm not going to sign this one, or I'm not going to sign that one, because then the Republicans will come back and say, well, you're not for education, or you're not for paying the military, or you're not for this.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. That's a standard trick, is to shove everything into the bills that fund things. Right, that's how NDA got passed with its provisions at the last second, because we have to fund our military. No, I totally get what you're saying.
But it is a trick, because if the Republicans really wanted to unfund Obamacare, they would have funded everything else and not handed him a bill to fund Obamacare. They would have handed him individual bills for everything. That way, they would have had to sign it, because they couldn't just say, well, no, we're not going to sign this bill to pay the military, because they didn't give us a bill to fund Obamacare. So the Republicans are doing nothing but theater. And that's the problem. All we get is theater. And we're told what to think by the media. The media tells everybody what to think. Most people don't even understand. They don't even have a concept of the Constitution.
Are you a constitutional scholar or lawyer? I'm just curious. I was asked by somebody in the chat room.
I spent a lot of time reading this stuff, and I understand it. I'm not a lawyer. Don't insult me. And
my father's a lawyer now.
What kind of lawyer? What kind of lawyer?
Criminal law, but that's a discussion for another time. I'm sorry, I got to pull the plug on you because we have lots of callers in queue, and because again, this is my kumbaya fest. This is my kumbaya show. I want to get past all of this nitpickiness and all of this finger pointingness and just let's again concentrate on finding our common ground and finding solutions. And I don't know if the first lady's middle name is LaVon, but I have somebody logged on in the chat room as Michelle LaVon Obama. So if that's you, Miss First Lady, welcome to the show. If it's not, I'm not sure exactly why you're parading as her. Or maybe that's not her middle name and that's why you put your middle name in there. So I apologize. Maybe one of my brilliant callers like 206, whose microphone I'm opening up right now, will happen to know. 206, you are on the air with Press 1 for Democracy. Who do we have the pleasure of speaking with?
Would that be me?
206, area code?
Oh, yeah.
That is you.
Yeah, my name's Bob.
Hi, Bob. Where are you calling from?
I'm just right outside of Seattle, actually.
Ah, okay. Do you know the First Lady's middle name?
You know, actually, I don't. But
okay.
I also somebody did a quick search online. You could find it in about 15 seconds. If somebody did a quick
okay.
Search.
All right, send me my chat room.
We'll
do that for
you. You could even go to, yeah, we kind of call it Hillbilly University. It's called the Internet.
Yeah.
Those people that, yes. Hey, but you know,
okay.
It's a highly, highly, highly powerful tool. It's our best communication tool.
So if you don't mind me asking, so do you affiliate with a particular party? Just as a set the groundwork.
Well, I've never.
If you don't
want to
say, don't say. That's cool.
No, I've never voted Republican. I'm 48 years old. I just don't feel that as an overall theme of what they stand for, that they've ever stood for anything that.
Let's not go there. Let's find where you have common ground with a Republican, or maybe with Jeff, my Tea Party friend, who was the first caller.
Well, I suppose some common ground would have been, I guess we could have looked at the 2001 through 2006 Congress that was controlled by, you know, one party, Senate and the House and the presidency by one party. They spent a lot of money during that time. There wasn't a budget that they didn't pass. They didn't have any problems spending money then. They seemed to fund everything that they wanted to fund then. They expanded government, which I thought they preached something about not expanding government, but that just wasn't the case. So back then, they seemed to have no problem funding anything and everything. You know, the way I see it, it's like this. It's our tax dollars.
And I don't mean to interrupt, does that mean you're in general for smaller government? Just in general terms?
I don't know. What does smaller government mean? You mean a government that was being run during 1952 or 2013? Because we got a lot more people, we got a lot more military, and we have a lot more interests in the world. So, what do you mean by smaller government?
Let's pick one. Let's go there. Let's talk about the military. Do you believe that we should be involved in the two wars we're in the Middle East?
Absolutely not. I would cut military funding. You know, it probably impact a lot of jobs. It probably a lot of research and development. But I would rather divert a lot of military funding into, you know, higher education, public education. What we spend in $700 and some billion a year on the military, it's a lot. We subsidize everything in the military: housing, medical. That's all subsidized. I mean, if you're I was 4 years in the military. If I had a wife, I'm not married, but if I had a wife and children, my wife wouldn't have to work. My children are automatically covered. All their health care is paid for. They don't pay any health insurance. It's all taken care of. Housing is all taken care of.
No,
live
all doubt. So first of all,
a lot of money that we spend on the military.
I agree. So first of all, thank you for your service. I cannot thank you enough. Because of the sacrifice that you made, I get to do what I do every day, and I appreciate it.
Actually,
thank you.
But this is when people say that to me, I say, don't thank me. Do something about it. Like, join up. That's kind of my message to most people, especially young people. Don't thank me. Go do something. Go do it.
Okay? No, I totally agree. My closest bit of service was when Ronald Reagan reinstated the draft in 1980, I went ahead and filled out my card. I was the only one of my friends I knew that did it, and I said, if my country needs me, I'm going. So
actually, I don't believe that was a draft. I believe that was the, what do they call that? That is the selective service. That's not a draft, dude. But,
well, I apologize either way, but I certainly was willing to go. But anyway, here's what we've agreed on. So we've agreed on we want to save the money. We can do better things with the money, right?
Sure.
And here's my whole point. And the whole point is this: we can have a relevant discussion about what to do with that money once we actually have a say in our government, and we can then get out of those wars, right? But as long as those top 10 arms manufacturers, Halliburton, and all the other people who are making gobloads of money off that war have the influence in Congress, is it likely we're going to get out of those wars?
Well, you know, if you look at American history, you tell me when we went very much time without a war, or we didn't have our noses and our beaks in somebody's water overseas. You tell me since the Revolutionary War when we have not been involved in something on a ten-year stretch. I don't think that you can. I guess that's just
I can't affect what happened 50 or 100 years ago. I can affect. I should be able to affect
history,
to some part what's happening today, because
I
live in a democracy where I have a vote.
Right. I understand. Well, you know, I mean, I guess the way they handled this last deal seemed to be, you know, a little more reasonable by, you know, listening and saying, hey, we're gonna get some inspectors in there. We're gonna bring in more people. I mean, you know, it was yes, we're gonna go blow up. You know, what was that over there? Syria, but
Syria.
You know, thank God we didn't. It's just, you know, that's big government. People forget that war is big government. That is big government. It's big-time spending. It's big-time government expansion. It's expensive to run a war. And then you have people that actually have the nerve to say, hey, we're going to cut taxes. We're going to cut the exact money that we're using to burn and rebuild over there and everything else that we do, but we're going to cut those taxes, so we're not even going to fund what we want to do. It's just backwards logic. I really don't get it. If you want to go to war, great. Then tax the people.
So give me 60 seconds on how do we fix it.
There's never a quick fix. That's unreasonable. It's not even likely. Things have to progress, and they have to progress slowly. But we hope that there's change. I think that there has been change. You know, our communication system has changed. You know, look what we're doing right now. I'm talking to you through my telephone. I could be anywhere in the world. All I need is an internet access. So communication, I believe, is probably the biggest tool and the best tool that we have right now. I encourage people to access information. I encourage people to read case studies. I encourage people to go to your public libraries, to your law libraries, look up reliable information. Reliable, not what somebody says or somebody's opinion. Go read reliable, peer-reviewed research and learn. Education is the key. It's not, talking is important. I totally agree with that. But get your rear ends into the library, read roll call, find out who's voting on what issue. Like these people that say they're independent, go read the people that you think are independent. Read exactly what they are, what they're voting on, what their voting records are. You go to roll call, and you can find exactly what people are voting on. All the way back to 1837, I think, is when they started roll call. So the history is there. All you have to do is read it. That's what I say.
Okay, learn. Education is the key.
Education and right. Communication is.
Whoops, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there over your last couple of seconds. Let me reopen your mic really quickly. Education and communication. We didn't hear the rest of the thought.
Oh, I'm sorry. I just said education and communication. That is key number one. I happen to be in a Master's of Library Information Science degree, so I find it very useful and extremely important. A highly educated electorate is a much smarter electorate.
There it is.
Will help.
Could not agree with you more. Thanks very much for your call. Appreciate your time.
Yeah. You
moving right along. 724, we're going right to you. How do we come together, coalesce, and solve the problems? 724, your mic is open. Who do I have the pleasure of speaking with?
Hi, Dan. It's Greg in Pittsburgh. Can you hear me okay?
Hey, Greg in Pittsburgh. What is the haps?
I'm just glad that we have come to some agreement tonight on the fact that none of us are actually constitutional scholars. It's fine to have an opinion, and I have plenty of my own. But I just wonder if maybe if we spend a little less time thinking that we are qualified to dissect what the founding fathers meant, intended, or thought, and maybe spend a little bit more time living in the present, thinking about what we can do as citizens today to help redirect and right the ship. I think that would be a much better use of everyone's time. That's just my personal opinion. You know my thoughts on how to fix some of these problems, and it's an absolute support for the American Anti-Corruption Act.
Right, exactly. Let's go back to the constitutional question.
Do we have to? We do.
Just slightly though, but only to find common ground, Greg. Only to find common ground. Don't
okay.
panic. Don't panic.
Me?
So here's the thing. We have to change. We do have the ability. You heard me say it. I believe in the fact that they were smart enough to understand that times change and that you need to be able to have this document as a roadmap. But you know, sometimes you build new roads and sometimes you discover new underground fissures that maybe it's not safe to build a road over here. And so as things go by, the map changes. It fills in. I'm totally with you that we need to concentrate on that today. But I don't think we could totally just ignore it. I think we have to look at certain protections that are afforded us by the Constitution as being, kind of more written in stone than others, if that's possible.
I'm not suggesting we ignore it. I didn't mean to suggest or imply that we ignore it. That was not my intent.
Okay. But it's a filter that the legislative branch has to think of, because of course everything they do, you know, can wind up in front of SCOTUS, and then they can say no or yeah, that's fine. So
right.
I mean, okay, good. I just wanted to make sure we were saying the same things.
And to the point of your previous caller about an educated populace, I couldn't agree with that more. Understanding history is certainly an absolute part of it. I think I was trying to be, I was trying to imply more along the lines of this belief that a lot of Americans have, and Angry Jew, I happen to agree with a lot of what you were saying, by the way, so don't take this personally. But if you're not a constitutional scholar, please don't preach to me like you can tell me what the Constitution means or what the founding fathers intended. I'm happy to have a discussion around the history of anything, but your approach to that whole topic was a bit off-putting. But I know, I understand that might be part of your nature. And again, I'm not trying to make this a personal issue. I'm just suggesting that if we're going to find common ground, one of the things we ought to do is kind of come to the table agreeing on what are facts and what are opinions and what's our interpretation and what's reality. And sometimes I think Americans, especially those of us who are willing to spend our evenings calling into a show like this, we're very tempted to demonstrate just how smart we are and how much we understand and how much somebody else doesn't. I'm guilty of it too. So I'm suggesting part of the kumbaya is let's not pretend that we're constitutional scholars. Let's not pretend like we understand what the founding fathers intended, meant, or thought. Unless you come to the table with those credentials, I'm not going to put a lot of faith in that. I'm going to continue to ask you, okay, that's great. Now, what do we do today? What do we do now? What are we going to do to make things better? That would be
So let me take that and up the ante a little bit. I don't care how much you studied, don't tell me that you know what was in the mind of a person that lived 300 years ago that's not here to verify that.
Amen, brother.
That's what I get tired of. I'm like, well, this is what they meant, and this is what they intended. Yeah. I'm like, you were there? It's like, wait a second, come on.
And even if you had been there, you can't know someone else's mind. Now, read a lot of their writings. You can do a lot of your research, and you can come to a lot of conclusions that everybody else is coming to at the same time. And you know, there's a degree of consensus that can be built up around those kinds of things. I get it. But, guys, this is not 1776. It's 2013. We've got to stop pretending like these guys were some sort of living gods, that they were prescient in all things. If they thought they weren't making any mistakes, they wouldn't have given us a framework that could be changed and amended. They understood that. And it's time for us to be thinking about the kinds of changes that need to be made in a modern society. This is not the 18th century.
There you go.
I'm done.
Well said, sir. Well said.
You can mute me. Go to the next call, Dan. Thanks.
Okay, that's cool. Besides getting money out of politics, what's the other thing we agree on that you're frustrated that we're not being able to get done?
Oh wow! It all begins there. But I would also reiterate, and I don't remember which caller it was that talked about, and it actually might have been Angry Judah that did this, the idea of the media. It's our responsibility to be informed citizens, and that means we do have to actually take on at least some degree of responsibility for ensuring that we don't just take whatever is shown to us or fed to us as gospel. And unfortunately, the Fourth Estate has suffered such an immense decline in my lifetime. I'm a 50-something, so, you know, I was around, when there were three stations that you picked up over the air with an aerial on the chimney. And I'm not suggesting for a minute that they had it right and people today don't. The problem with today's media environment is that there's so much competition for us as consumers that – it is human nature. What the news organizations, profit and loss centers now inside these broadcast networks have to do is attract and retain eyeballs in order to sell advertising. Fox News could not exist in a world in which people were well informed. Period. End of story. Full story. Not as a news source. Anybody who watches that programming for half a day comes away with the conclusion that it is not news. It is all opinion, and it is all meant to reinforce and perpetuate a certain amount of what can only be described as propaganda. MSNBC does the same thing. To be clear, they do the same thing. So if we're not listening to, watching, and doing our own research around reputable sources about what's happening in America, then we're going to easily be duped into believing whatever it is the corporate media wants us to believe to perpetuate us tuning back in tomorrow to hear the next salacious story that you know, is going to sell more soap.
I hear you. Okay.
There's a great resource. Hey, one last thing, Dan. There's a great little handbook. It's like a little 9-page tip sheet that was published by On the Media that helps to point out, without any sort of bias, if you ask me, the kinds of things for us to be aware of as we're consuming media in this country. Listening for things and statements like sources say or other news outlets are reporting. Guess what those are not? They're not facts. They're not corroborated facts. So
I think that's the big line I think that people really need to learn to cross. And again, Greg, thanks very much for your call as always. Is at least, even if you don't know whether it's a fact, know the difference between something that is stated as a fact and something that's stated as an opinion, and don't state facts as opinions because they're not. Or don't say opinions as facts because they're not. You know, I am always very clear to say, and I love it. It's something I got from Steve Mance, who moderates our local organizing chapter organizers page in Coffee Party, and he taught me the tech speak. IMHO, in my humble opinion, right? So I always try to say, in my humble opinion, when I'm going to espouse an opinion. If I say something as a fact, could I be wrong? Absolutely. But I've got sources, and I guess I got sources to back me up. So, and I'm always happy to be corrected. I am wrong periodically. I admit it. My wife tells me I'm wrong all the time, and she's right. I'm probably wrong all the time, but don't be afraid to say you're wrong. I give you a perfect example. So in the post today on our Facebook page for this show, the preview, I wrote that 90% of all Americans had said they want background checks for people who are about to purchase guns. And some guy came out and just said, "Oh, you must be sipping Kool-Aid if you think that was ever the case." So I listed not one but two sources, and I apologized to the gentleman, said, "I'm sorry, I was wrong. It was actually 92%, according to the CBS New York Times poll that was referenced by HuffPost, that said they wanted background checks for people purchasing guns." So, you know, again, if I'm going to say something as a fact, I'm going to say it as a fact. And if I'm going to say something as an opinion, I'm going to say this is my opinion. And I wish people would actually understand that. It would be great if they did it. Like, here, hold up your right hand if it's a fact. Hold up your left hand if it's your opinion. Just let me know somehow. But too many people in the news media are trying to try to push off opinions as fact all the time. Happens way too much. That's something that could change. And sometimes I think the only answer is let's just turn them off. Just take the clicker and turn it off and say, no, I'm not going to patronize you, and therefore your advertisers are all going to go away, and then you'll go away. So I think that's the answer. I don't think it's can be stated more often enough, I should say. But we have to remember that we are the consumers, and as consumers, we have the ultimate power of the off switch and what we do with our dollars and cents. So with that little soliloquy, I will go on and open 202's microphone. 202, you are with us on Press One for Democracy. Welcome into the show. Who do we have the pleasure of speaking with? Area code 202, your mic is open. I might have put him to sleep with that last little bit. Okay, area code 202, I'm going to mute your microphone and come back to you, and hopefully you'll be ready to talk to us. Now I'm going on to area code 262, which will be followed by area code 850 and then 804. 262, who do we have the pleasure of speaking with?
I'm 262. And,
you're 262.
Yes.
Beautiful. Who am I speaking with?
Barbara.
Hi, Barbara. And where are you located?
In a suburb of Milwaukee.
Oh.
And, yeah. And I just I picked up a little later. And so I have some very strong opinions as to what is going on in our country. And you're looking for ways of finding compromise. Is that what I hear you
not
saying?
Necessarily compromise. Let's find. I think it's compromise is not even. I think it's stronger. What I'm looking for. I'm looking for common ground. I'm looking for where, no matter what color you're affiliated with, or what color I'm affiliated with, or anything, that we can actually agree. So I don't even think there's necessarily compromise. I think there are things where we all agree on as a people. And we just need to put down the labels and quit assuming that because somebody has a different affiliates with a different party or a different philosophy, mm-hmm. that we're automatically at war with each other.
But see, I don't see us as being very free to do that. I see our democracy as failing, and I see our government is failing. I feel checks and balances isn't working. I don't think federalism is working. I think there's extreme elements in our country who are being bought out, and I'm really very concerned about the future. And I and I see things going on in our state, too, that kind of represents what's going on, like gerrymandering, the voucher system in our education where public education is under attack, partisanship in the Supreme Court, the state Supreme Court. There's partisanship in our Supreme Court, who, and that's where the Constitution says our Constitution is to be analyzed or, decided whether something is according to the Constitution. And I think that's getting very difficult because I think it's all partisanship. And
you've said a mouthful, not in a bad way. I don't mean that in a bad way. You've run through a whole bunch of different stuff. So let's go back. You say democracy is failing. You say our system of government. Let's just and you, of course, I always give like an extra wide berth to anybody who's from Wisconsin, given what you guys have been through with your governor over the last 6-7 years. I'm like, people from Wisconsin, if anybody understands political pain, there's people that understand political pain. But let's talk about the national level for a second here. So what do you think is ruining it?
Well, I think
why do you think it's not working?
Well, I think it all starts back to the Supreme Court ruling that corporations are people. And so the influence of money in corporations is so great that people who are qualified and perhaps would be wonderful leaders don't have the money and they can't run for office and because they unless they cater to these special interests and get the money, you're not going to get good people. And I just think that you get these people who are way on one end of the spectrum. Either I'm thinking very right, but right now I don't know of anybody that's really left. But I mean, who really have ideas that are being backed by wealthy people who want their control of our country, and I see happening.
So that's very interesting. So if I might ask, do you identify with a specific party?
I consider myself a progressive, and
okay.
I would vote for a candidate if I thought somebody was very good, and I had respect for them. I don't care what party they were in. Like for instance, I like Christie. For what he did when it was necessary to defend his state. And he got out of, he said, I don't care about politics. And if that man, continued to, and he ran for president, and I felt that he wasn't under the influence of some very, people who were way on the other end, I would consider voting for him. So it's not necessarily a party.
Yeah. And it's funny you mentioned that, and it's actually something I wanted to bring up with a previous caller about the fact that the one piece of our country that is a democracy is that we do have one man, one vote, one woman, one vote for electing our leaders that do represent us. And that has been, to me, that's where it's all gone off, the wagons run off the rails. To me, it's the party system in general and the way the parties are run that is ruining that piece of it for us. And I, for all the reasons why you just said, and you said it very eloquently, but here's the thing. My first caller of the show was, and you, I know you said you picked up a little later, was a Tea Party person. Mm-hmm. He feels the exact same way that you do about the undue influence of big money on politics. Exactly the same way. Now, he wants...
He's thinking of unions.
He wants smaller government, and he can't get smaller government because big government props up big business, which then gives money back to the politicians, right? You're for additional spending probably on infrastructure, more spending on higher education, more spending, the typical progressive agenda, right? Now, here's the thing, and this is why we need to come together. Neither one of you will get what you want until we kick the big moneyed interests out of Washington, D.C.
Exactly.
So can we just put down our guns and come together and hold hands?
How?
And get that done. And, we have to start, to represent us folks, you know, they're for uniting around this as a single particular issue and signing on, making politicians say, yes, I will sign on to the American Anti-Corruption Act. Are you familiar with the Anti-Corruption Act?
Not really. I mean, it's something I have to follow through on.
Okay,
but,
well, go to www.represent.us, and you can learn all about the Anti-Corruption Act. It's about getting rid of lobbying. It's about stopping people from going from lobbying to government back to lobbying. It's really attacking sources of corruption attacking corruption at the source and stopping it dead in its tracks. And if you know, because see, here's what I figure. Then you and Jeff, my Tea Party friend, once we actually have a say in our government, we can then sit down and have a meaningful dialogue about, you know, what we want our government to look like and have a chance that it'll actually look like that, right? But we can sit here till the cows come home and talk about doing all this stuff, but if we don't have a say in government.
Well, the bottom line is, how do you get this repealed, this Citizen Act? That to me is the worst. That is the beginning of the worst.
Well, that's our friends that moved to amend.
That's the angle our friends
that moved to amend are taking. And we at the coffee party, we fully back them, and we're involved in working with them. We will throw our support behind any movement at all that is based on getting money out of politics and resting government control back to the people.
But I don't see the people getting – I mean, I live in a community that's more conservative. And so I, you know, I'm like considered some kind of – I don't know what, but I'm not really.
You're considered a political leper. You're considered
I call myself
let me guess. You're a libtard, or what are the other stupid names that people, you know – And then there's other people on the other spectrum that are Republicans, and, you know, and that's, right. This is what needs to stop. So here's the exercise, Barbara. Talk to them about crony capitalism. Talk to them about subsidies for oil companies. Ask them if they're for or against that, you know, for oil companies that are already mega wealthy and mega profitable.
Mm-hmm.
And then here's the other part of transpartisanship that you will have a chance to participate in, and that is this. On a national level, transpartisanship becomes a little bit more difficult. On a local level, your government means so much more to you because it has a direct impact on your life. Do you think that those people want good schools in your neighborhoods?
Oh, but you don't know what's going on here in Wisconsin with our vouchers.
No, they want vouchers. You don't. I understand that. I'm not saying
that. No, most of the people
But everybody wants good schools, right?
Mm-hmm.
You want
mm-hmm.
good services, right? You want timely trash removal. You want your streets to be plowed when the snow comes in the winter, and I know that because I'm a Chicagoan.
But they want
low
taxes on top of it.
Okay, but start where you agree. That's the idea. Start where you agree. Then have a conversation about how to get there. But instead of starting where you know you'll never agree, you know, like talk to somebody, you know, who's morally far to the right, why talk to them about abortion? This is not a conversation you're ever going to – nobody's going to move, right?
No. Mm-hmm.
So let's skip the divisive topics. And let's get to the things we have in common. How are you? What about raising the minimum wage?
Oh, I think it should be raised.
Yes. Now, let me throw a couple of stats at you, right? 71% of all Americans are for raising it to $9 an hour. 66%, two-thirds of the American people are raising it to $10 an hour. Now that's two-thirds of the country that are in agreement. Okay, I bet some of those are your Republican friends, because actually 54% of even Republicans said they were for raising the minimum wage. So even the majority of Republicans are for raising the minimum wage. And, you know, this is a conversation we was having Saturday. People are talking about defunding of assistance, like food stamps, which is ridiculous, obviously, in this time. But what happens if all of a sudden you raise the minimum wage and people can get off of assistance? There's money that's going to be coming back into the system for that. It's a win for everyone. And then assistance can be just for people who really need it. Because right now, you know who's getting food stamps? A ton of Walmart employees. Now, why should you and I have to foot the bill when these people are working? Because Walmart doesn't want to pay them a living wage. So let's raise the minimum wage. It's a good thing.
I think I've done a lot of this where I do have some very close friends, and there are certain things that we can agree on. But I guess I'm just seeing the whole picture of what's happening in our country, and I'm very concerned for my grandchildren and whatever. I just don't see how it's going to get any better. I really don't.
Not with
all the big money and the Koch brothers and all the – I mean, I just don't know.
George Soros and let – I'm just for you, AJ, Angry Jew, and George Soros and all the big money that comes from the left, absolutely. You're right. You're right, Barbara.
On both sides. Yeah, I agree.
Correct.
But I would – yeah, I mean, yeah, because where are we going to get good leaders that are honest people when they have to kowtow to the money?
That's right. That's why the coffee party is we're trying to free the elected. And even the good ones are talking about the fact that that this the huge percentage of time that they have to spend fundraising.
Mm-hmm.
When they have no time to govern, they're busy fundraising.
And the people that want to run are, you know, the people that want to run, they have a certain agenda, and it's just very, very, you know, makes me very uneasy. And they'll have money behind them. And it's almost like we need a leader to emerge. Like we've had leaders in the past during times when our country was in crisis. I can't think of anybody right now that would emerge that wouldn't need the money to be influenced on either side. You know?
Yep. No, you're absolutely right, and I very much appreciate your call, Barbara.
Of course.
Go to represent us. Get involved with Move to Amend. There's plenty of movements out there that are about throwing the big money and interest out of politics. And
said the Anti-Corruption Act. What was the WW what?
It's www.represent.us. So the campaign is called Represent Us, but it points you right to the American Anti-Corruption Act. And it's a law that was created by a committee of people, including a former head of the FEC, the Federal Elections Commission. It's been vetted by a lot of different lawyers and said it stands a better than good chance of holding up in front of the Supreme Court as being legal or as being constitutional. So yeah, read all about it. It seems to be, to me, the shortest distance between where we are and where you and I want us to be, which is back in control of our government.
Okay. I appreciate it. I will look into it.
And I appreciate
you
calling and joining us on this Monday night, Barbara from Milwaukee. 850, I want to open your mic and then I want to ask you a favor. 850, who do I have the pleasure of speaking with?
I'm thinking it's me. Is that would that be right? This is Kurt.
That is you.
In South Florida. Hey, how you doing?
Good, good. What's your name, sir?
Kirk. Kirk Graper.
Kirk.
I'm down here. We talked once or twice in the past about jobs. That's, in my opinion, that brings everybody to the table. Good-paying jobs, building a sustainable platform for communities to live on and work with. Anyway.
My favorite subject and a perfect segue. Would you indulge me? I have a 4.5-minute clip I want to play that speaks to exactly what you're talking about getting the economy back on its feet, getting people back to work, and why it's not happening. And it's probably going to be a repeat for somebody, for some of you out there, but it's so resonates with me Would you mind if I play that and then we can chat?
No, I don't mind at all. I've been trying to get hold of you for a while off, on regular time. But, yeah, please do.
All right, hang on a sec. Kirk, don't go away. I am going to play my favorite rant from the last, though I don't know, it's just my favorite, from my buddy Dylan Radigan on MSNBC about what is going wrong with the economy and how to fix it.
$70 trillion.
I understand that, but
don't
you
to walk out
say,
a $4 trillion solution, which is basically just a way for the Democrats to avoid dealing with this until 2017. I'm not here to talk about plans to deal with this till 2017. I'm saying we've got a real problem, and I'm tired of Republicans and Democrats who either want Republicans who want to burn the place to the ground, and Democrats, with all due respect, who want to offer a plan that gets it through the their end of their second term of their presidency, and then screws me and my kids when it's over. And until we do that, we have to deal with the extraction that is at foot. It is the reason the financial markets are behaving the way they're behaving. That is a mathematical fact. This is not some opinion. This is a mathematical fact. Tens of trillions of dollars are being extracted from the United States of America. Democrats aren't doing it. Republicans are not doing it. An entire integrated system, financial system, trading system, taxing system that was created by both parties over a period of 2 decades is at work on our entire country right now. And we're sitting here arguing about whether we should do the $4 trillion plan that kicks the can down the road for the president for 2017 or burn the place to the ground, both of which are reckless, irresponsible, and stupid. And the fact of the matter is, until we actually, and I'm sorry to lose my temper, but I tell you what, I've been coming on TV for 3 years doing this. And the fact of the matter is that there's a refusal on both the Democratic and the Republican side of the aisle to acknowledge the mathematical problem, which is that the United States of America is being extracted. It's being extracted through banking, it's being extracted through trade, and it's being extracted through taxation. And there's not a single politician that has stepped forward, Susan, to deal with this.
Yeah, but there's only one right now. The leader of the free world, whether you like it or not, the president of the United States is arguably one of the most powerful individuals we have out there.
But
and
Susan,
he's
what you're
president.
Saying is exactly the point that Dylan is making. It's not about one guy. It's about all of them.
No, I actually disagree. I think Dylan
is about one guy.
I would like him to go to the people of the United States of America and say, people of the United States of America, your Congress is bought. Your Congress is incapable of making legislation on health care, banking, trade, or taxes, because if they do it, they will lose their political funding and they won't do it. But I'm the President of the United States, and I won't have a country that is run by a bought Congress. So I'm not going to work with a bought Congress and try to be Mr. Big Guy. I'm working with the bought Congress. I'm going to abandon the bought Congress like Teddy Roosevelt did, and I'm going to go to the people of the United States and I'm going to say, you've got a bought Congress. And until we get rid of the bought Congress, which is Jimmy Williams' constant point, which is get the money out of politics, and until a president says that's the problem and says he's going to fix it, there is no policy that I can possibly see, no matter how brilliant your idea may be, or your idea, or my idea, or her idea, or your idea at home, is. That idea will not happen as long as there is the capacity to basically fire a politician who disagrees with me by taking funding away from him. Is that a fair assessment?
Money in politics is the root of all political evil. It is corruption at its worst. And until we step up and kick that out of the park, it's going to be the same system all
the time. And only the president can do that.
Ah, Dylan, man, I get so fired up when I hear that. But, I mean, I get so fired up in a good way. And the mission is clear. And, you know, whether you agree with Dylan Radigan on his the level of vehemence, I mean, obviously, sounds like a lot of frustration. Like you said, he's been stomping on it for 3.5 years, and nobody's listening. By the way, he goes on to say the solution, his solution would be to create an infrastructure bank with repatriated dollars and do direct lending at 2% directly to business. So no middleman's banks don't get to make money on this. It's not a money-making proposition. It's just a way to infuse inexpensive capital into business directly and spur the economy on. So that I love that. I love that rant. Anyhow, you're listening to Pragada. Take a breath here. You're listening to Press One for Democracy. This is your host, Dan Aronson. We're here every Monday night, starting at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 6 p.m. Pacific Time. But I'm not the only Coffee Party Radio host, and this is not the only Coffee Party Radio show. We also have The Middle Ground with Eric Beiler, one of the co-founders of the Coffee Party, on Tuesdays, starting at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. On Thursdays, we have Lunch with Loudon with our executive director, Janine Loudon. That show starts at 3 p.m., Eastern Standard Time, 12 Pacific. And then on Saturday, we have Egberto Willis with Politics Done Right. And that starts at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Saturdays. 10 p.m. a little early rise action for us Pacific Coasters. So Coffee Party Radio is alive and well, leading the discussion. And this one, of course, is about how do we get corruption. How do we get rid of corruption in Washington, D.C.? How do we get rid of the moneyed interests? And how do we find our common ground? How do we make that our common ground and allow ourselves to call a truce? Okay? How do we call a truce in this vitriolic rhetoric of left v. right, of Dem versus Republican, of small government versus big government, of raise the minimum wage or not, or gun control, all these divisive issues and all the rhetoric we hear spurred on by the 1% media, because that makes for good television, right? People fighting makes for good television. Jerry Springer showed us that, right? If I can get a guy to throw a chair at another guy, my ratings will go through the ceiling. So how do we stop this for a second and agree that until we kick money out of politics and until we wrest control back of the government, back to the people, that these discussions that we have every day, whether they're on a Coffee Party Facebook page, whether they're on a Coffee Party radio show, whether on the street, at the coffee shop, in the corner, whatever it is, they just don't mean anything. They're not relevant, because none of us can sit there and write a check for $250,000 and hand it to a senator or somebody running for the Senate or somebody running for the House of Representatives. Then you don't need to talk with other people about what they want. It doesn't matter. Now you're in a position to get what you want because you got the money. So that is what we're trying to get to. And what I want to do is I want to go back through our guests, most of which are still on the phone. And by the way, if you want to get in on the action, you can call in at 646-929-2495. And press 1 when you get in the queue, and then we'll know that you want to get on the show. I see that 206, you called back in. I don't know. You did have your hand up previously. I don't see it. But if you hit 1 on your keypad, I will know that you do want to jump back into the call. Okay. Well, just take your time if you'd like. Otherwise, what I want to do is I want to open up everybody's mic. I'm going to try an experiment, right? An Egberto Willis style experiment. And I want to try just taking a survey. So I'm opening everybody's mic. So if you are in a noisy area and you wouldn't mind self-muting. And I want to start with actually 206, because they've now jumped. You turned on your hand. So 206.
Yeah.
Let's bring in really quick. Who do I have the pleasure of speaking with?
Well, this is Bob again. I don't know if you were referring to me or somebody else. So.
Okay. All right. So, Bob, we did hear from you.
Yeah, you did earlier. I was talking
okay.
About
I'm sorry.
Remember the
so,
educated
so as long as I've got you, as long as I've got you here, Bob, why don't we start with you? Just say for or against raising the minimum wage.
Oh, definitely. When I was in high school, when I graduated in 84, my mom said it should have been $10 to $15. Absolutely.
Okay. All right. Thank you. 202. Is that Barbara? That's not Barbara. Who's 202? 202, your mic is open.
Absolutely. Okay. All right. Thank you. 202.
You might be listening to your radio, 202.
Who's 202? 202, your mic is open.
Absolutely. Okay. I'm going to go ahead and mute 202. Kirk.
Yeah, we missed our little interlude there, but Dylan definitely said a lot of good things, and I guess that's why he had to take a little break after that one. But minimum wage definitely needs to go up, but, I mean, you're going to have all kinds of problems from people, you know, denigrating that they don't deserve it or whatever.
Well, you know what? We're building a coalition here. We'll get to those people when we get to them. Greg. Greg Rusick, are you for or against raising the minimum wage?
I'm for it.
You're for it. Okay. Sorry, Greg, you were a little weak there. Dan.
100% for it.
All right. Jeff.
I am for it, yes.
For it. Okay. And One Angry Jew.
Yes.
Mr. Angry.
For it. For it. Okay. And One Angry Jew.
All right. Apparently he stepped away. So, we have a new caller in queue. Hold on a second. 804.
And
804. Who do I have the pleasure of speaking with? 804. Your microphone is open.
Is that the area code?
Yes, the 80. Yes, sir.
Jonathan Kaiser.
Hi, Jonathan. How are you? I'm going to have to, unfortunately, I'm going to have to mute people. Whoever is listening online, there is a delay. And so that is going to mess us up and put us in one of those infinite broadcasting loops. So I've closed everybody's mic for a second, but if you're listening to the show online and through the phone, please turn off the online stuff, if you don't mind. All right, sorry. Jonathan, is that what you said?
Yes, and I'm just on the
Jonathan,
phone.
Jonathan, where are you calling from?
Richmond, Virginia.
Richmond, Virginia. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Well,
do you have anything in general to say about finding common ground?
Actually, in Richmond, I was at one of the first coffee parties and ended up as the media spokesperson for at least a few months. And what I have enjoyed about listening to tonight's show is some of the things that the group who showed up in those first days of the coffee party. We had members that represented themselves as Tea Party members, you know, all the way across the spectrum. And we found that we had common ground at that point. And even then, you know, as media spokesman, I just had a kind of a small job off to the side occasionally to talk to a few people who showed up and tried to cover us. They were looking for, you used pronounced divisiveness. They were looking to find, you know, wedge issues where, you know, there was disagreement, and we kept saying the same thing. We have common ground on this issue, this issue, this issue, this issue. And when I speak about these subjects in any forum, what I find is that you if you listen very carefully, you can hear where people stop listening to you by their responses. And it's been very disappointing to me, no matter where people are in the political spectrum, that for some reason or the other, they stop looking for a solution to an issue, and they start identifying with a label or some buzzword that they've heard, and they'll shut someone down because someone identifies and mistakenly uses the, you know, libertarian label. And it's been a long way. It's hard sometimes to not want to just distance yourself from the whole process, but, you know, this political system is us doing what this, you know, show tonight is doing. So here I am again, and very encouraged by, you know, what I'm hearing. But the change that is positive in Richmond is actually in Richmond, and it's local, and we work very hard to, you know, to see it actually make a statewide change, if not a national one, and so, or international one from there. So I identify with so many things that have been said tonight, but I can tell you here in Richmond, Virginia, there are tens of thousands of people that would be agreeing with everything that's being said tonight, but they are trying to make a difference, you know, right here in their lives, every decision, and still finding themselves overwhelmed by, well, so many things, ignorance and just the powers of many other forces. And I think it was the Ecology of Commerce, Paul Hawkins, who has said it very well in his books and many speeches. You know who I mean? I'm referring to Paul Hawkins.
I'm not familiar, no, sir.
Well, Paul Hawkins, Smith and Hawkins, he started a number of ecologically minded businesses over the year. He's written Ecology of Commerce, Blessed Unrest, and in his particular the book Blessed Unrest, he actually, with a number of people, spent many years researching the small individual groups, from sometimes just one person to maybe several hundred, who are doing things that are improving around the world the conditions of people doing everything that they do. But they base the economy on labor and resources. And if what those people are doing is actually improving the larger economy, if you will, that is, others could actually say, yes, what they're doing is good, we appreciate it, rather than literally just saying there's a bottom line, we're only doing this for our own self-worth and to improve, what we call money, essentially. I should go back to the way Paul Hawkins summarized it. He said, if you don't look out at the world today and you're not absolutely disappointed by what you see, you're not aware of what's really going on. It's vast and it's disheartening. He says, but you need to be optimistic also that there are far greater numbers of people, and this was just after a few years of researching all of these organizations around the world. The list, when he shows this as a movie, he's running it as a trailer of all the names of the organizations and what they do. And he makes the point that this would not run for just a few hours. It would run for weeks. And that was actually several years ago that Blessed Unrest came out. There really are so many more of us than there are those who are actually controlling or pulling the purse strings. And what we all vote with is locally up to, international decisions. We vote with where we spend our money and our time and our attention. And so maybe that's what I'm trying to add to the conversation tonight, is that what we have in common really is our time and what we offer to one another. And if we make better decisions with all of those decisions that we make with our time and our what we produce or what services we offer and those that we tender for ourselves, we can make a very, very loud noise. And we're not necessarily going on strike. We're not necessarily showing up and completely resisting other forces and getting ourselves arrested or beaten or pepper sprayed. But we are an economic force, and we make a huge noise if we all start to make more discerning decisions about where we spend our time and money. Thank you for listening so long.
No, not a problem. Not a problem. Always interested in hearing feedback from, especially from the early on Coffee Party members, because I joined about a year and a half ago, and what I heard from the older when it first started, and then some of the things that it had changed and it had morphed in certain ways, and it kind of gone away from the original mission. And we're trying, I'm on the board of directors as well, and the board is trying to get it back to what the intention was, which is this big tent organization where everybody is welcome to sit down at the table, join in the discussion, and as long as it's fact-based and as long as it's civil and as long as it's transpartisan, which is exactly what you're saying. I mean, you actually described transpartisanship in action when you said you sit down and you talk to people and you don't you don't prejudice, you don't allow your ideas and your prejudices of their label to affect what they're saying or in the way you're receiving what they're saying, right?
Correct.
And that's transpartisanship in action, and that's a beautiful thing. And that's where we're trying desperately to get back to that. And again, to become a big tent organization and to promote those types of conversations. And I think that's why for the last couple of weeks I've been concentrating on things we agree on. And everybody agrees on the primary mission of the Coffee Party, which is we have to get big money out of politics so that citizens right. can have a voice and a say in their government, because we don't now. I don't know enough zeros in my checkbook to make it happen.
Correct. And to answer your question, you've been asking the open mic question, yes, I support a living wage, raising the minimum wage. But to your point there about getting the money out of politics, how can we affect that change on both the minimum wage, living wage, but also getting money out of politics? Well, we're doing it within a system that exists. I think we also have to approach it as other systems, other ways of delivering the services and products that we deliver today. And whether that be barter systems, additional local currencies, I don't know that there's really a limit to in our time that we would be wanting to talk, you know, to how many different types of systems that have already been attempted to solve this problem. So I don't think there really should be a limit on our human ingenuity now. And I wonder if there is anyone, whether it's the Coffee Party or others, that are actually sort of creating a database of these potential solutions. How do you get politics out? How do you get money out of politics? There's histories of the Byzantine Empire, you know, the Byzant as the currency, you know, was used for about 700 years, and it fluctuated a little bit in inflation, and they treated people who handled currency improperly very harshly in those days, very harshly. There were still wars, obviously, and there was still a lot of manipulation even of that one currency over 700 years, but there are thousands of economists who have, I can't remember the title of it, put a study of that particular period of time and done very detailed research. We're living almost ahistorically when it comes to our currency fiscal policy today, and even the people who are clearly, you know, supposedly making the decisions about it. Hank Paulson has just come out with a documentary, you know, from the 5 years from the brink. They admit, the better and more honest ones, they don't really understand the system that's out there. It's almost
right. And
uncontrollable.
And then I know Bob, our caller from Seattle, said the same thing. We need more education, you know. And that's probably one of the things that I think needs to be looked at as hard as anything in Washington is the ultimate failure of No Child Left Behind it's done horrible things to our educational system, and you're right. I don't think anybody here is going to disagree with you when we say we need to look at every single possible option, and then let's have an intelligent discussion on the pros and cons, and let's figure out which one works. That is the intended. That's the intended. You know, that should be the intention of the system, is to go through that process.
Right.
But as you said, until we get the big money and interest out, can we really do anything? And, you know, I got to find out the name of the gentleman who Dylan turns to and says about the anti-corruption stuff in politics, and the guy who says, yeah, until we kick that out of the park, we're never going to get anywhere. So maybe that means we kind of put everything on the back burner and we just tackle this head on. And we imagine if all the voices were talking about this one issue.
Right. I should have asked you simply, have you heard anyone suggest anything that sounds like a solution to getting money out of politics?
I think you've got two out there that I want to say for sure are our solutions. You've got the Move to Amend, and you've got the American Anti-Corruption Act. Now, the American Anti-Corruption Act, which you can find out about at represent.us, is a short game. I mean, it is a law that, again, has been vetted, and their folks say it's constitutional, and it will hold up against any claim that's unconstitutional. But that is our short game. And then the long game, I think, is the Move to Amend, is amending the Constitution. And I really think both of these things I don't think it should be competing forces. I think they both need to be worked on. And then if there's a third and a fourth and a fifth way, I mean, we should get behind all of them. But let's just put our energy into this, because it's the one thing everyone agrees on. Only somebody who has the wherewithal and the desire to corrupt government in their favor would be against an anti-corruption act or an amendment saying you got to get money out of politics, right?
Right. I wonder how many other folks on the call have children. And I happen to have two sons, 13 and 16 years old. One is in a school that kind of specializes in government and public policy, international policy. And he just took a very interesting summer course on economics and finance. But a few years ago, before this summer, he had actually asked a question, which kind of led directly to a direct democracy question or response, because he simply asked, why don't people actually get to directly vote on issues, if not at least to tell the representatives, this is what all the people in your locality believe on this issue. Now, you're up there, you're doing whatever has to happen, you know, in whatever, you're a representative or you're a senator. However, this is what your constituency is saying, and it's as easy as, you know, it runs concurrently while they're in Congress or wherever, that people can go online and just simply click, and they can respond by phone, by mail, in person, a number of different ways, but just recorded. There's my vote. I can even go back and change it on the issue later and say why. You know, it's not that expensive to do in this day and age, but he is asking a very, you know, I think children sometimes cut to the chase. Our representatives, you can actually, there's several visual graphs about the votes of our senators and representatives, and they're clearly voting on issues that are not, it's not just rhetoric, are for the 1-2%, if you want to say 1-2%, but it's really more for a corporate mindset without even trying to bash corporations and the existence of a corporation, but just more literally a mindset of, you're protecting our bottom line. And he comes up over and over with my two children. I wonder if others find the same thing. They can't even understand what, at this early age in their lives, they've been taught through elementary school, through middle school, and now just into high school, isn't actually how their government works. And it's
right, exactly. So I could tell you this. That's a question that I make a living in the technology world. I'm in computer networking and communications and telecommunications.
Right.
And wouldn't it be wonderful if we could do opinion polling by congressional district and actually match those up? Yeah, it's a business waiting to happen, I think, but maybe the government needs to do it for us. But you're right. I mean, it wouldn't be that difficult to do.
I think the kids
end up coming to that conclusion because they're growing up in the technology, whereas some of us old fuddy-duddies are just getting into it. So I think they understand that the technology is there, and it's, you know, it's doable. I mean, if 15,000 or 20,000 or 80,000 people can log onto a World of Warcraft server and play World of Warcraft, they kind of get our younger generation is growing up in an electronic,
they realize we're connected,
the electronic right? age of connection, and they realize that time or, you know, space, distance doesn't matter anymore. You know, time zones don't matter anymore. None of it matters anymore. We can be instantly connected to any other human being on the planet, and be engaged in one way or another, whether it's playing a video game, whether it's asking help what they think about whether they should raise the minimum wage. And I think that's just something the young people get. And I will tell you, Jonathan, and thank you very much for your call. I can tell you this. I constantly am telling young people, you better get politically involved. You better get active. You better get educated, because our generation, and I'll stand up on behalf of our generation and say, we've mucked it up. And it rolls downhill, and you are the ones standing at the bottom of the hill. So you better get involved from the, you know, preferably before you're 18, but certainly if you're voting age, and you better get out there and you better get involved, and you better not become that group of people I hate to talk about, those 90 million people that didn't even show up and pull a lever in 2012 because they were either disenfranchised or just sick and tired of the process. You're turned off by what must have been, thank God I don't live in a swing state. I can't imagine the kind of ads that were coming at you and the amount of them and the volume right before the election. So thank God I don't have to live with that. But, I mean, it's so easy to figure out why people get turned off. But you can't be. And that's it. Because we do live in a republic, or a democratic republic, and our democratic process, we get to exercise our democracy typically twice or once every 2 years. So you better not miss it. Kudos for your child for becoming involved and for asking those questions. And please tell obviously I'm sure you're encouraging him to keep asking. We do have a new caller, and area code 850, I'm opening up your mic. Who do I have the pleasure of speaking with?
Yeah, no, it wasn't a new caller, but we kind of missed our boat there when you went to Dillon a while back. It's Kirk back down in South Florida.
Oh, Kirk, sorry about that.
Yeah, no sweat. I was wondering, is there any opportunity to communicate and connect with some of these folks that we're talking to? Because, you know, he mentioned that fellow, that did the movie, and, you know, I'd like to, you know, communicate with some of them folks and yourself. But, you know, I really don't have the wherewithal sometimes to, connect, find the right, method. Sometimes I've tried to find you. You'd ask for, because we do job development programs, with renewable energy. And that, to me, is the catalyst for most all communities to bring anybody from all parties together, is a good job that helps their community that they can get involved in. There's no partisanship when everybody's working and nobody's, suffering too badly, it brings the minimum wage up. I mean, it just covers all the bases, and it just seems to be an opportunity where everybody can get behind it. And once again, it doesn't go anywhere. The models that we've created, which basically use waste products, sewage and garbage and machinery that turns it into money, and then we, mentioning the green funds, or the infrastructure banks, we have a program similar to that, and, trying to get the big ticket guys like Dillon and, everybody, yourself, to get knowledge of what the different groups are doing, but tying them together so there's a bigger voice,
Well, first of all, God bless you for some reason putting me in the same category as Dylan.
Well, one
can only aspire to greatness,
I'm kidding.
I agree with you. So there's a couple of different ways that we can do this, and if this is something that is desired, what I can do is I can look at setting up a simple WordPress site for Press One for Democracy, and having a forum there where people can go and discuss in between shows. That might be definitely worth doing.
There's a group out there. There's a group out there that we developed started with 40 or 50 different nonprofits around the country, and each one of us was trying to find another group to try to find ways and means. This is 2 or 3 years ago now, And one, you know, one that we did connect with from here in Florida was with one in Washington, D.C. And anyway, now we've developed something as a group when there's like 80 different communities and nonprofits and different businesses. But it's called the Community Power Network. And, you know, it's online. I mean, and our little group here in Florida is called Eco Nation. But, I mean, in other words, but there's like a map and, you know, everybody has access to the map. And you can call up and find out what each group is doing. And in other words, it's a good model. We tried to find models where it became accessible. And I also, unfortunately, seems like once you have the model, then the excitement of trying to interact and reach out to each other kind of goes a little bit by the wayside. But I don't say it's gone, but the building things, it's kind of like, you know, when you're looking, you know, building a relationship, you know, there's more excitement. And then when you get married, you know, you have to work at it a little bit. So, anyway, what I'm suggesting is, I don't know if you have a position or a platform where you can already facilitate, you know, that kind of communication. But if not,
sure. There's a couple of different things that come to mind. We have a tool called Big Marker, but I'm thinking maybe even a Google Circle might be easy.
It's easy when you said you're in the communication business. When I'm in the, you know, construction consulting and developing these kind of just jobs programs, I don't have the skill set necessarily that I'd like to when it comes to the electronic wizardry that's available at your fingertips. But if you don't know the actual ways and means of utilizing the wonderful tools that are there, then you're basically like a babe in the woods wandering aimlessly sometimes. So that's
right.
Why.
Well,
if you'll do me the favor,
Kirk, if you will email me at P1FD, that's
yeah,
P as in Paul,
I
1,
that.
The digit 1, F as in Frank, D as in David,
yeah,
at
no,
comcast.net.
I have tried that a couple of times and had zero success, just got sent back. It might be easier if I just
yeah,
gave
no,
you
no,
my
the,
email.
We had a glitch in the Comcast account. Then that should be fine now. But but if you do that, then I will promise to keep you informed and let you know as we build that thing out. But I think it's a great idea, and I appreciate the suggestion.
Great. Sounds
good. All right, thanks for your call, Kirk. Appreciate it. And I see my buddy, who had to be out at some rally for Monsanto or some something about the upcoming United We Stand Fest, or a call with Dan Johnson on Panda, has finally agreed to grace us with his presence, Mr. Rodrigo.
Wow.
How are you this evening? You call in the show with 7 minutes left.
No,
we don't want to hear it. It's okay. It's all right.
Well, let's see. Right now, one of my employees is in Fairburn, Georgia, picking up air mattresses that are being donated from the Tomorrow World event that happened. That we were contacted via various connections, and we're taking a bunch of them up to the homeless shelter to give to them.
Very cool.
And then tomorrow morning we're doing another load, so I'm in the middle of that. I was on a conference call with the people against the NDAA strategizing for my speech on Monday and our whole approach to the Albany City Council on the resolution that I sent you about that I discussed with you last week. And it was long, but it was worth it. We were on the phone with a lot of people that are based in Albany. We have a lot of people involved in it. In Albany, we don't want them to think that we're a bunch of out-of-towners coming into town. And stuff. I sent a message to Joe Pomponia about it. I hadn't talked to him about it yet. I had forgotten, and I wanted to let him know what was going on because I know that he's, of course, active in his area and stuff. So, tomorrow I have a March Against Monsanto meeting at 7:30 with a bunch of us. We're going to give out all the flyers. I got Gavi Organic Soda out of Denver, Colorado, as one of our sponsors, which is kind of cool. The only organic soda on the market that I have found, and they're very good. It's a very good product. They're also doing the United We Stand Fest. And I wanted to ask you, If we could do a discussion next Monday after the presentation to the council, because you'll be coming on the meetings at six, the council meetings at 6:30, so we should be done by 9, I would suspect. And like to get some of us sit them at a table and join the show.
Oh, absolutely. That's
all that stuff.
Absolutely.
I'll probably, obviously I'll have my speech with me, so maybe we could do that. But anyway, I just wanted to chime in and say hello, and I'm sorry. I did have something I wanted to tell you that I read today that I thought that was interesting. I know that I'm sure that you talked about what was going on in our wonderful government, at least a little bit.
We did not talk about the impending shutdown at all. We talked about our common ground and issues that we all agree on. That's what the show is on tonight.
You didn't talk about the clock?
About the clock? No. I leave that to Egberto.
That was on the right side of the screen on the news program? I'm so proud of you.
No, I will not give the 1% media any shout-outs here. Well, that's not true. I did play my Dylan Radigan's rant.
That was a great rant. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I know.
I know the one you're talking about. Yeah.
Janine did her whole show on the fact that they're taking us hostage and how criminal it is. And I agree, of course, with every bit of it. But
yeah.
We were concentrating elsewhere tonight. So over the weekend there were already cracks in the Republican armor. You know, they're going to cave. It's not going to shut down. It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen.
I find it so. I like the clock. I like the fact that I went into a place this morning to have breakfast. One of my local. They had a really bad thing happen in my neighborhood yesterday. Robbery that was horrific. They lit a guy on fire.
All right, 3 minutes and 38 seconds. The show's ending, big guy.
Gotcha. So I went into the thing and they had CNN on the wall, like they do, and they had a poll. And the poll question was, "Do you think that they're acting like spoiled brats?" I said, "Gotcha, that's such good information for me to know about this morning." It's the poll about the spoiled brat poll. I thought that was fun.
Spoiled brat. Well, and you can't tease us now. What were the results of the spoiled brat poll?
No, I know you need. The spoiled brat poll. You know, there was a percentage that said that Congress was acting like spoiled brat. I shut that stuff down. I can't listen to that.
Good for you.
I jumped right into the sports page, buddy. What are you talking
there
about?
Yeah, how about those Falcons? Ouch.
Stop.
No better if you're a Giants fan or a Jets
Falcons
fan either.
Would pull me out of I was hoping the Falcons would make my evening good. I listened to the game on the plane last night, flying to New York.
All right, big guy. I'm going to close down the show. We'll catch up during the week.
Definitely be good. Thanks. See ya.
All right. That was Bobby Rodrigo and the Bobby Rodrigo 5-minute sponsor. Bobby is a super active guy. He's involved in so many different good causes. And just to clarify, what he's talking about is on Monday, he has been chosen by PANDA, which are the people against the NDAA, to go to Albany and present a resolution for the Albany City Council, hopefully to pass, that it comes out sternly against against the unlimited detention of U.S. citizens clause in the NDAA. So, yes, we'll definitely want to get an update from how that went and be happy to talk to you about that because as regular listeners to the show know, it is a sore spot in my mind and I think in most people's mind, the fact that through the NDAA, our Congress and the President have suspended a lot of our rights, or at least allowed people to have their rights suspended, like habeas corpus and due process. You know those things, not very important, really. No big deal, right? Uh-huh, he said facetiously. So anyway, we'll get an update on that. I'd like to thank all of my wonderful callers tonight. It's a fantastic show. I really appreciate everybody's participation. And look, we found a lot of common ground amongst people who are independents, people who are progressives, people who are a Tea Party, and we found a lot of common ground. This is what we need to do, people. We need to make this our mission moving forward, and we need to find our common ground, and we need to kick money out of politics as a start. So, again, this is Dan Aronson with Press One for Democracy. Hopefully we will see everybody here next Monday night. And if you're until then, don't forget the middle ground with Eric Beiler on Tuesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Lunch with Loudon, 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Thursdays. And McGirta Willie's with Politics Done Right, 1 p.m.